You know, I might start seeing the world like Joe Rogan, which is super freaking scary, by the way.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
It's Monday morning, which means it's time to get happy because it's time for the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. I am Dan Franks, coming on oh so very shortly, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra. Today in round one, Joe and I are going to look at the signs that you're headed down the wrong track and ways to turn that train around and go down the right track. Then in round two, we're going to talk about laying the foundation for your networking before that network is ever even needed. It's an interesting concept that's put on by Jason Womack, who's our guest in the main event. Jason is a productivity expert. We're going to talk to Jason not only about being more productive, but also about his special take on networking, so you won't want to miss that. Now, before we get started, I want to tell you about our brand new release, and that is our 5x5 toolkit. What is a 5x5 toolkit? Well, you're going to have to head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com, drop us your email address, and we'll send you this 5x5 toolkit, and I promise it'll be worth that little trade of an email address. And we can't wait to hear what you guys think of it. Now, for the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com. And now, let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
For round one today, Dan and I, we're going to play the role of a fortune teller. And we're going to talk about what warning signs are going on right now that maybe signify that you're on the wrong track. And we were inspired by a post from markandangel.com. I hadn't heard of their site before until I ran across this post. And they've actually got a lot of good stuff. So we're going to link to them below and send them some love. But since we're both under 30 type people, I think this is definitely a great article for people in our age group, because since your life is somewhat beginning or your career is somewhat beginning, there may be some posts along the way that you may be hitting that may be signifying that maybe you're on the wrong track. And Mark and Angel, well, this was written by Mark, he gives 9 different signs that you're on the wrong track. And one of them that stood out to me was the second one. We're not going to go through all 9 of them. You'll have to go to the post to check it out. And it's, you're only doing what you're doing because it's safe. And again, just from talking from being under 30, a lot of people, I feel like at our age, and I know people that I graduated from college with, they kind of reach a point already where they're content with their life. And they're just happy living their life for the next 50 years the same way they're doing right now. And I don't know. That's just something that Sam's my wife, that we've never felt that way. We're still young, so we want to still experience things and take risks and see where life could take us. Because, I mean, we both have steady careers right now, but we're not sure, since we're still young, if that's going to be the path that we're going to end up taking. And we're always willing to try different things. And just as a quick story, like we lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we were both at jobs we didn't enjoy. And we're like, well, we could just keep doing this forever. We started looking at houses and stuff like that. And then one night we're just like, we're not going to do this anymore. Let's do something fun and let's just move and get out of this whole state. And we moved cross country. We moved to Texas and we're living here and we're enjoying it here. But we're always looking for the next thing, the next goal that we're going to be doing.
Yeah. And it's almost disheartening sometimes when you look at some of the people around you, whether it's family members or friends or coworkers, anything like that. I'm not even thinking of anyone in particular. I'm just thinking as a whole, a lot of times, you know, us as ambitious people, because I feel the exact same way as you about not ever necessarily being satisfied about where you're at, but always seeing what else is out there. And I feel like we're almost outliers when we have that kind of, do you feel like an outlier sometimes when you know, to just describe yourself? Like, you can't really describe that many people around you like
that.
Well,
I don't want to say it like that, because I don't want to feel that, I don't know. I'm not saying, if I do think like that, it's not because I'm saying it because I think I'm better than anyone else. But I do feel like I've invested in myself to improve myself more than probably a lot of other people who may never have even just listened to any type of self-help or read any good books about improving your mindset or anything like that. But I mean, I wouldn't say I'm an outlier. I would just say I'm just not a settler. I like to always be finding adventure and stuff like that. That's kind of Sam and I's theme, is find your adventure from Up, the movie.
Okay, well, so that's a great movie, and I'll come out and say I feel like I'm an outlier sometimes, and that's not at all disparaging anyone else or thinking I'm better than anyone else, because who knows? You know, this whole idea of being too safe, maybe sometimes for those who try too hard and fail, maybe it would have been better to be safe. So I'm not saying it's better or worse, but what I'm saying is looking at a lot of people around me that don't have some of these same ambitions and are very, I guess, satisfied where they're at when they could be so much more. I don't know. It's just sometimes it's disheartening to see all those around you and not, you know, you don't want to force your thoughts or your ideas on anyone. But I do feel like lots of people just play it too safe. And I feel like sometimes one of the best things I've taken from any of our guests is Tim Connolly from Foolish Adventure. And he gave us the 3 D's, the anything you try that might sound risky or dangerous or be too large of a leap, will it cause you any of the 3 D's, dismemberment, destitution, or death? So if whatever this risky, you know, quote unquote risk you're about to take, if it's not going to cause you any of those 3 D's, then maybe it's a risk worth taking. Because if what's the worst that can happen? If none of those 3 D's happen, then it's not going to be bad. And I feel like sometimes people have this whole slow and steady wins the race type mentality, when really sometimes you just have to put the foot on the gas and try something and see how it works. Because if you're going down the wrong path, which is the whole title of this article, but you're going slowly, like, you could be going slowly in the wrong direction, but never, you know if it's the wrong direction or not.
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, if you've already used to doing things that maybe you get out of your comfort zone for, then yeah, maybe the 3 D's that Tim Connolly talked about would work. But for someone who's never even thought about something like that and doing anything that may be out of their comfort zone, then I think that one's a little more extreme. If they just do something that, hey, go to like a local meetup about something that, I don't know, something you're interested in, and go meet someone, and maybe that'll change your mindset. Because a lot of people, especially when they graduate college, they feel like, well, I have a job now. Hopefully a lot of them have jobs. I don't know nowadays. But they have a job. They're making a little bit of money. They're not living off their parents anymore. And they feel like, oh, well, I can just settle down. I think I don't need to really learn anything anymore. I can just kind of go along at this pace, and hopefully one day I'll be the boss somewhere and whatnot. And that's, I don't know, I think just too many people think like that when they could think, okay, where can I improve in my life? Even if it's just something simple, how can I be a better negotiator so that I can get more things that I need, or maybe climb up the pay scale or promote myself more? People don't think about that stuff because the only people they see, because they don't ever actively seek out to invest in themselves, they just see what's on the news. And the people that make the big bangs, the Oprahs and Zuckerbergs and all that, they're out of your league. And so they're never even going to try and think like that, that they could do something like that. So they just settle in and do what they always have done. And I don't know. I just see too many people doing that. But another point, I know we talked a lot about that one, and I guess this one's a little, it kind of ties in as well, but it says, his seventh point, Mark's seventh point, you are too busy to connect with others in a meaningful way. And I think this kind of just goes to, one, being able to understand that people are always looking for value in every relationship. And it sounds so obvious, but if you don't understand just what value is and what bringing value to someone really is, then you're never going to be able to do it. And a lot of people, especially the young people, we're talking about young people more, they don't understand, and this goes back to our first point, they don't understand time and that you have a limited time to make things happen. And a lot of them waste their time, and they waste their time just doing the same thing over and over again instead of trying something different. And they don't figure out ways to add value to, whether it's their boss or add values to someone they want to connect with. they don't understand that because they never are able to figure out what that even means.
Yeah, and one of the good things about articles like this is that you and I can read the same headline and think completely two different things on it. So I don't know if this is anywhere close to where you're going with this one, but too busy to connect with others in a meaningful way. To me, I view this as so many people you encounter in a day-to-day life, in your day-to-day life, whether it's at work or, you know, at the grocery store, at the gas station, or anywhere you encounter people, and you have small talk with them. Like, how hard is it to make that small talk into a small connection and see if there's any value you can bring to one another? And I this was huge when I was doing real estate very actively, was I would be at the grocery store, and if anyone asked me, you know, oh, so do you have a good day at work? And I would immediately say, oh yeah, you know, and I'd tell them a little quick story about what I did or just something, you know, something real estate related. And they would say, oh, you're into real estate. Do you buy houses? And then it just goes from there. And that's kind of a very simple example. But if you're just willing to open up to somebody and maybe there's some kind of value you could provide them, some kind of need they have that you might be able to satisfy, there's no way of knowing this unless you just open up yourself to do that. So I think that's maybe a completely different direction than Mark was trying to go with this. But to me, I see all these opportunities in the daily life now that I never did before. That about people I might be able to connect with further that I never thought possible before.
Yeah, I didn't see it that way, but and that's something I'm always working on is when, even if you do talk to someone for just a little bit, is there some way that you could help them, even if it's just, hey, I know a great book that after talking with them, you may realize that they'd like, just something like that, that people always appreciate, especially if they know, hey, I'm never going to see this person again, but they wanted to help me out in just a little way. And that's just little, I don't know, acts of kindness that you don't have to spend money on. You don't have to buy the person behind you's lunch or anything like that. It's just little things you can do to help other people. But there's how many? We covered two. So there's seven other warning signs. So especially if you're in that area, in that mindset where you may feel that if you're even asking the question, am I in the right place right now? You should go check out this list. Mark detailed it really well. And it's interesting. And I'm sure everyone has one of those points that they're going to run across and be like, yeah, that is me. But I think one or two is probably normal. If you're all nine of them, then you probably have a lot that you probably have to work on.
You might need to see a specialist.
There you go. A specialist. What do we charge? $200 an hour? So.
So. Yeah, but one night only, we'll give half price, $100 an hour to anyone willing to sign up now.
Exactly. Our ad's on Craigslist. So, but we're gonna get away from this doom and gloom warning signs, and we're going to get to round two and our guest in the main event.
Round two.
Right now for round two, what Joe and I are looking at is a blog post by Jason Womack, who's coming on in the main event. And Jason Womack is known as a productivity expert. He coaches people to be more productive. He blogs, he podcasts about being more productive. He is the productivity man. But this article that we picked out, we wanted to pick something a little different because when someone's super great at being productive or being efficient at what they do, maybe that means that the other things they're doing that they're using those skills towards might have a little different spin on them as well. And this one particular blog post that Joe and I looked at is about networking, one of Jason's techniques for networking. And he says, build your network long before you need it is the title of the blog post. And the whole concept behind this is, well, and I'll have to ask you, Joe, how you interpreted this, but this whole article to me was, hey, you already are surrounded by this certain group of people. They are what they are. These are the people that are currently in your life without any additional networking work to do. So now let's figure out what we can do with these people. How can we leverage the people already in my life to be the best, you know, the most productive use of my network? Is that kind of how you took it, or did you read it differently?
Well, he kind of talks about, in the very beginning, he talks about people you look up to and enjoy being around, and he mentions, like, TV shows and authors, so I guess it's maybe not people that you're directly talking with all the time, but maybe people you just expose yourself to that are influencing you, and he's saying that that could be part of, I guess, your network in a way, which, I mean, I think it's more of like when you look at LinkedIn, it's like your third degree connection. So you're not totally connected to them in a certain way, and you're not directly connected. Maybe you know someone in common, but especially maybe with like a TV personality, you may not have that connection
or that second or third degree connection. So that can be, it can be hard to say that they're in your network.
But you certainly got to say they're in your sphere of influence, right? Like this whole, I think this somewhat relates to the whole idea of you're as whatever you say, you're as good as the five people you surround yourself with the most, you spend your most time with.
Yeah, well, and that's hanging out with people, not listening to their stuff.
Okay,
that's
but
different.
For you, you know, you or me or probably a lot of our listeners, they have full-time jobs and they might spend 8 hours a day listening to podcasts. And if they're listening to some of the same people over and over on a weekly basis, those people, they might be spending more time with those people in their earbuds than they are other people in real life, which, you know, that sucks. But, you know, during if I have a super busy week at work and I'm listening to a bunch of podcasts, hey, Joe Rogan might be my best friend that week. And I'm, you know, I might start seeing the world like Joe Rogan, which is super, super freaking scary, by the way.
Uh-oh.
But I think that's kind of where he's going with this, is that these people, you're more or less surrounding yourself with these people and spending time with them, regardless of if they're in person or not.
But when you think of a network, that's not what you think of. You think of the people who are first directly connected to, usually at just say our age, people that we're working with right now, like you and I, or people you went to school with, professors, whatever, not really people that if I watch Shark Tank every day for the next year, that doesn't mean that Mark Cuban is in my network. And it's infamous because everyone tries to get like Mark Cuban on, or try to pitch Mark Cuban, and it's just funny listening to stories about how impossible it is. But I wouldn't say that that's part of a network. That's an influence. That's something that's influenced the way I think and maybe introduced me to new ideas. But when you think of a network, it's people that you can actually reach out to and expect a response from and receive advice, or you help them out in some way. So that's where I get a little, I don't know, I just think it's a little different than what you usually think about networking.
Well, yeah, and then he goes down, first he does list the people that you spend the most time listening to or reading, you know, what authors you read the most or what TV news anchors you watch the most or any of that, and talks about them kind of being influencers. But then he does kind of break it down to a more local level and talks about, well, who's the last speaker that you went and learned from, and then who's the last university professor that you reached out to that were connected with a few months or a few years ago. Or he even goes down to like, who's the manager at the last restaurant you ate at? Like, did you connect with this person? And I think that's more exposing you to the ideas, like all these people, the more local you get with that, breaking down this network that you're already surrounded by, the more people you have available to you. So, you know, if you ate at, I don't know, some family restaurant, you could have networked with that owner. Who knows what he knows, but he is running a business and he is somebody that you could add to your network very easily that maybe you just didn't even think of before.
Well, I've heard people doing that, I know that Tim Ferriss has some sort of tactic to be like a VIP at a restaurant, and it's not something that he kind of makes it sound easy, like, oh, you can go and befriend the owner. But the way that Tim Ferriss does it, because he's done it before, is you got to go to that restaurant many, many times till the wait staff gets to know you, because then you then have access to the owner on an easier basis, because especially with nicer restaurants, the owners aren't usually just hanging around. Maybe at like a franchise you'd see it, but not really at the nice restaurants. You just see the manager there. But in that way, yes, if you're trying to become like a VIP somewhere, or you want to have your face be known around that certain area, then yeah, it would be good to visit it a couple times and then try and see who you can get to know there. And that's more getting out of your comfort zone and introducing serendipity and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then before we do get to Jason, I do want to also touch on the second item that he talks about this, and this is being the person that other people want to spend time around. So we just got done talking about looking for those people to reach out to in your day-to-day life already, but this is kind of, on the flip side, being one of those people where people want to reach out to you. And we've talked about this in prior episodes and prior discussions. Maybe if you're the good storyteller, everyone wants to hear that story that you have to tell next. Therefore, you're going to, I guess, organically build this network, because people are going to come to you and they're going to bring their friends to you, or they're going to bring their coworkers to you. So being that person is very important, because that's a way to, I guess, double how fast you can grow your network. And that's definitely something that we want to get Jason to go into more, because I think maybe that's that untapped piece of network building. Everyone talks about how to reach out to other people and how to find good people to network with and good techniques to network with. But maybe optimizing yourself to be someone others want to reach out to, not just being a super successful blogger or podcaster, but just going about your daily life and presenting yourself in a way that makes you more appealing. So without further delay, let's get on to Jason Womack in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Today's guest in the main event is more productive than you. That's right, I can say with almost absolute certainty that Jason Womack is not only more productive than you, but also more efficient. Jason is a master at optimizing his self-performance so that no matter what task he's working on or what goal he's trying to reach, he's going to do it better. And in fact, Jason Womack is the author of a book titled Your Best Just Got Better, where he teaches leaders and future leaders the art of productivity. Jason also has his hands in a litany of other projects and travels the world speaking on productivity and a whole lot more. In fact, the topic we brought Jason on to talk about today, although I'm sure we'll get into productivity, is one of his unique spins on networking that Joe and I discussed in round two, and that's leveraging relationships you already have to build your network of the future. Today, we've managed to catch Jason while he's in town and staying in one place for a minute. So without further ado, let's go ahead and send it to Jason. What's going on, man?
Hey, welcome, everybody. Thanks for having me on this podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we've already talked a little bit and we're going to talk a whole lot more. But without going too deep into your background, we want to make sure to have somewhere to send our audience to if they want to hear your backstory and kind of where you got to where you are today. So where's the best place they can go to find that out?
Since this is a podcast, jump over to my podcast, Your Best Just Got Better. Every Friday, a new episode, and it's less than four digits. I do less than 10-minute podcasts for everybody every Friday. Your Best Just Got Better.
So that means you can go on over there and download a handful of them and still get through them in one drive to work or one workout session. You can get through multiple ones, so knock them out quick. And they're super, they're content packed. There's not a whole lot of fluff, so I like that. Now, I mentioned in the intro, before we get into anything else, I want to talk about your traveling a little bit. You're traveling Yes. all over the world, it looks like. And I mentioned we pin you down because you just got back from traveling and you're about to take off in a few days. Tell us what all this traveling is about and what you're doing everywhere you go.
You know, I realized years ago that I'm a traveler. I learn by doing, right? There's three learning styles. Some people can see it, they get it. Some people can hear it once and it's inside somewhere. Me, I'm that guy that I'll unwrap the new iPhone and I'll throw the, you know, the little tiny instruction booklet that they give, and I'll just press buttons to see what it can do. And so for me, getting out into my world, getting out into that place, I remember once I was nearing the end of a year, guys, and I had just shy of 100,000 miles with American. And if you get 100,000 miles, they treat you a little bit better the next year. So I flew to Munich, from San Francisco to Munich. I had dinner and then I flew back home. What was cool about that is I had a friend of mine from Frankfurt. He took a train 4.5 hours to have that dinner with me. So for me, getting out into the world, being there, being available, I learned so much more personally, and this is just my style, than if I just sit behind a computer, sit behind a desk.
Well, now we don't want to gloat, but since inquiring minds have to know, what perks do you get after that certain amount of miles that most of us don't have?
Oh, man. I mean, here's I'll unveil it. So I fly one airline. I fly about 150 times a year. I buy a coach ticket, and last year I flew in coach 6 times. I flew in business class all the rest.
Well, that's worth its weight in gold right there. That's That's especially funny, yeah. Nowadays, how they're shrinking the coach size.
I'm telling you. I mean, it's just – and it's this crazy thing. You know, I mean, I know we're going to talk a little bit about networking, but I mean, look, when I sit down in that part of the plane, the person sitting next to me is more likely a peer or a client than – you know, I don't want to overgeneralize, but I cannot tell you how many times just having my book out, sitting down on the airplane, someone leans over and says, "Hey, what are you reading?" And I say, "I wrote it." And all of a sudden, that becomes a discussion.
You read your own books?
I just leave it out so people can see it.
Okay. Come on, Joe. It's a tactic.
Some people have a business card. I have a book.
So
yeah, Joe, how's your business card looking now, Joe?
Well, I've been on planes, and I've heard that, yeah, you should have some sort of book to maybe someone will strike up a conversation. But I've always sat in coach, so that's never happened. But maybe, yeah, like you're right, that's where all the minds are congregating is in the business class.
I mean, I'll tell you a really quick story. I'll do this in a few breaths. So, you know, when I started this whole thing, I used to be a high school teacher. So, you know, I kind of got up in the morning. I went to one place. I was doing everything I could to impact those 135 kids every day. And then life changed. And when I started traveling, when I started moving around the planet, there was a book I carried with me. I'm looking at it in my bookcase right now. There's a book I carried with me everywhere I went. And the book called Never Eat Alone by a guy named Keith Ferrazzi.
Great book.
And if you have had him on the show, awesome. If not, you know, let's get him to talk to your crew. Anyway, this book, bright orange cover, big fat font, Never Eat Alone. And guys, you know what I started doing is I started bringing that book to restaurants where I was eating alone. And literally, I would leave it on the table so the party next to me on either side could see it. And I am literally to this day, I'm friends with two people in New York because we struck up a conversation. And I mean, maybe that's where we go with this thing. It's like, look, you know, those of you out there who are starting something, who are building something, the first thing that we have to do is be able to start a conversation with someone. How do you do that?
So is that kind of tactic hoping that someone comes up to you, or is there any way that you take initiative and you go talk to someone else?
You know, I figure everybody is looking for an excuse. I mean, you know, this is just relationship 101. If I'm at a party and I see someone across the room, I'm just looking for an excuse to introduce myself. And once that happens, I'm now in a choice point. I guess I'm just going to dive in, guys. At a choice point. Do I transact? Do I build a relationship? Or do I look for opportunity? Those are the three kinds of conversations that I have while I'm networking. Now, sure, you know, I'm seen as kind of a time management guy, as a productivity guy. But when it comes down to it, I'm having three kinds of conversations with people. Look, you know, when the three of us started our conversation tonight, I did everything I could to move it out of transaction into relationship, right? Where are you right now? What's going on right now? What's interesting to you right now? So any excuse I can get to build on that relationship, build on that opportunity, I will.
Well, Jason, I got to say, first of all, you sounded a little hesitant. Well, I'm going to just dive right in. On the showdown, you don't have to ask permission to dive right in because Joe or I aren't going to ask permission to get into anything that comes up on us. We're just going to go. So feel free to be free and do what you want to do on this show.
I mean, what are the biggest questions that your group comes up with when it comes to productivity, performance, managing themselves, which, by the way, that's all productivity is. People are always looking for the new app, the new system, the new list manager. And when it comes down to it, you get up in the morning. I want to know what your second screen is, right? I mean, a little bit of explanation. Everybody, when they wake up, they reach for a digital device, they open up a screen, and then they go to a second screen. That second screen, the third screen, the fourth screen, that's what draws their focus away from what the most important things are. And that fascinates me.
That's interesting. So that the whole idea in the second screen is what you need to eliminate or learn to, I guess, put some kind of restraint on?
I'm going to say be extremely aware of, right? I mean, if anything that people get from this conversation that we're having is bring a whole new level of awareness. I got a GoPro camera recently, that little hero camera that I can put on top of my bike helmet or I can carry around with me. What the most fascinating thing about that experience has been so far is I didn't notice how much other things I notice while I'm riding my bicycle. And this is how crazy I am, but literally I went for an hour and a half long bike ride and then I came home, I uploaded the film to my camera, to my computer, and I just watched what I watched over 90 minutes. And most of that time, I wasn't looking at the road in front of me. And that, I think that metaphor is so important when it comes to what it is we let ourselves get distracted by, right? Are you on point with what it is that you want to be doing? big question.
Well, that's interesting. You gave the example of the visual, what you're looking at that's doing that might not be focusing on the target. And I self-admittedly binge on podcasts when I decide to listen to podcasts. So recently I've been binging on some of your episodes, and a recurring trend that I noticed on a couple different things. One of the keys to productivity is to know what's taking your time away. And you've advocated multiple times to write down everything you do in the day, if you can, but just find some way to keep track of everything you're doing, so then you can look back on it almost like watching that video.
Can I tell you why I'm a fan of writing things down?
Yes, please. That's where I was going with that.
I'm a fan of writing things down because it engages all three learning styles. See, I'm a classically trained teacher. I studied education. I studied assessment. I studied portfolio programming. All three learning styles, auditory, visual, kinesthetic. When I let my hand hold a pen or pencil, when I let that stream of consciousness move across the paper, I'm kinesthetic, right? I'm moving. But I'm also visual. I'm watching what it is that's unfolding, but I'm also auditory because I'm censoring. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I write with my dominant hand, if I let myself write with my dominant hand, I'll write faster. If I pop that pen to the other hand, my non-dominant hand, I'll write slower, but I'll talk to myself more. I'll censor myself more. I'll talk myself out of writing something down because it takes too long. And all three of those things are so powerful for us to understand. You know, look, bottom line, if you're listening to this right now, what is the most important thing for you to put your attention on tomorrow? Write that down and just look at it. Just look at it, you know, every other hour on the other hour, and see what choices that you might make.
Do you kind of go along with something like a long-term plan that you write down, and every day for the next 5 years you look at it? Do you abide by that type of thing?
You know, I think I'm a bigger fan of not knowing but questioning, why am I on the planet? Now, why I'm on the planet hasn't changed. I mean, boy, here we go, guys. Why I'm on the planet hasn't changed much over the past several years. The manifestation of the action is what's changed form. So, you know, if I look out 60 months from now, which, by the way, that's my safe zone. I can go out about 60 months before the curvature of the horizon dips and I can't see what is beyond there. I've got friends of mine that can do 20 years. I got one guy that can do 60 years. Peter Diamandis, he's already seen 60 years into the future, and I trust what he sees. I can do 5. And in 5 years from now, I can see, all right, Jason, the reason you're on the planet is XYZ. What it looks like right now, it's probably going to look a little bit like that, maybe a little bit different, but the overall schematic of what's my day-to-day routine? I'm going to get up, I'm going to create some content, I'm going to publish that content, and I get to talk about that content.
So for this five-year type plan, how do you know, is this goals that you want, or is it what you think your life is going to be like in 5 years?
You know, I love that you set it up that way, because here's where I went. I would say if you're willing to look at that time zone, I would not do it alone. In fact, I would invite someone who cares about you, who's got your back, invite them to a coffee chat, or say you'll buy them lunch. Invite them to a dinner. You know, make a reservation at a nice restaurant and invite them to dinner. By the way, those just get more expensive through the day.
Yeah.
And ask them, and I've done this several times, and I can talk to anybody who wants, you know, if we want to continue that conversation offline or even right now. Ask them, hey, you have a perspective of me I can't have. You see me in a way I can't see me. Where do you see me in 5 years? Ask that question and then shut up. Listen, watch their body language. If you can get them on Skype, watch their face. If you can get them on the phone, listen to their intonation. Because the people around us, the people who support us, the people who love us, they see things in us that quite frankly, we can't see yet.
So you're advocating doing this cup of coffee or this dinner or whatever, people that are already in your network at some level, not people that are completely out of the blue.
I mean, there's another whole thing, right? I mean, the more you publish, there's some people who've been following you two guys that you have not met yet. But if you did a contest and said, hey, we're going to fly two people out to Dallas, we're going to have dinner with the four of us, all we want is for you to coach us on the next 60 months of our what we could or should be doing, I guarantee you, you guys would hear things that you haven't thought yet.
So have you done that before? Like put out a cold call to strangers?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I do this thing.
Tell us a story about the most effective one.
Coffee chat, hashtag coffee chat. This is something that I do wherever I travel around the world. I'll be in New York next week. I'll do a couple of these. I've done them in Zurich, in London, in Paris, in South America. And what I do is I say, hey, look, I'm going to be at this locally owned, privately held coffee shop. I'm going to be there from, you know, 7 a.m. till 9 a.m. Come on by. And I am telling you, people who show up, this one guy, you know, Jason, I've been reading your blog for 6 years, and I'm here to have a cup of coffee with you. And I asked him point blank. I said, why? Right? Why have you read this blog, and why did you show up this day? Why did you come from Long Island onto Manhattan? I mean, that was a 45-minute commute away from his direction that he needed to be in. And the number one answer he said was, I believe that you care.
And with this person, is it someone that you had talked to before? Or is it just out of the blue? He's just been reading for 6 years. And
guys, we've had them all. We've had people that, you know, are members of Get Momentum. They were members from the day that we launched that program. And they're folks that have read the book and been on the periphery for a long, long time. I mean, there's the bit of advice I'd love to give anybody out there listening to this. Start publishing, start producing, start shipping. If it's a podcast, if it's a blog, if it's an article series, I write a handwritten thank you card every day. I don't know if you guys caught that in some of the stuff that you saw of what I do, but every day, at least one handwritten thank you card. And what I've been doing lately is right before I put that card in the envelope, I'll take a picture of it. I'll email the picture to the person I'm writing the card to. Then I'll send it in the mail. And I can't tell you, over and over again, people go, I can't believe you actually sent it.
They thought it was like a trick or something, or some spam.
I had one guy, he said, I spent a few minutes trying to figure out if you hyper superimposed your handwriting on a picture.
Oh, I love that.
So these people, you do this coffee chat, and you said you get people from all different sorts of level of, I guess, connectivity from you, from your past, whether it's people that have been following in the shadows or people that maybe have shot you some emails. Do these people that all of a sudden decide to, I guess I would say, join your network by meeting up with you on one of these, do they then disappear again? Or are these people that are, I guess, in your network for into perpetuity now?
I think those two things, but the third one, which for me is the most significant, they connect. So for example, in my New York City network, I've got someone who worked with a very staid insurance agency. I mean, over 150 years old insurance agency. Another friend of mine, coffee chat attendee, is a freelance photographer. They came together. There was a group of about 10 of us that day. I get an email a few weeks later from Lindsay. She says, hey, Jason, I'm now the photographer for the insurance agents of New York City.
Well, let's go back first for a second, because I wanted to ask something about when you send off one of these type of thank you cards, is this a transaction or is this a relationship building?
So what I'm doing is, and it's a great question, thanks for asking it. People ask me all the time, you know, Jason, do you put your business card in your thank you card? You know, do you send it FedEx? I had someone ask me that, you know, do you send it FedEx? And I had to think for a moment, because I'm so naive and young, I guess. It's like, wait. And I said, oh, I know why they're asking that. So here's my deal. When I send a thank you card, generally speaking, I don't even put a return address on the front. I don't include a business card. And usually I'll just sign my first name. So here you are. You're the manager of a hotel that I stayed at in Chicago. I leave. a week and a half later, you get a thank you card in the mail, and it says, hey, I enjoyed the hotel I stayed in. Here's something that stood out to me. I really acknowledge you for training your staff to do this. Jason. If they wanted, they could probably find out who the heck I am. But all I want to do is just drop that out into the universe.
So that's not transactional or relationship. It's kind of just trying to make their day better. Is that what it is?
And for me, it's I get to spend 5 or 7 minutes being grateful. There's too much bad news in the news where if I let that be what I focus on, I can go downhill pretty quick. But if I kind of put myself to task, and I'm saying this with a big smile, if I put myself to task and say, hey, what went well this week? I'm that crazy guy where literally I'll be in a bookstore or I'll be cruising around Amazon. I'll see a book. I'll have another monitor up. I'll open up the author, their name. I'll send them a tweet right now. Hey, Dan Pink, I'm looking at your book. Should I buy it? And I'll wait for a reply. And darn it, over and over again, as accessible as people are and as open as people are, we're having these conversations that just started because I asked.
That's really funny. That's kind of you're kind of like like teasing him that yes, he has to say yes to that type of tweet if he's saying, should I buy your book? That's just hilarious. I love that. So when you talk about you're talking about news and how there's just so much just junk out there. This kind of ties into the poster we're looking at because you were talking about stuff that you tune into and authors that you read and everything like that. But when you think about networking, like we talked about in round two, they're not those people on CNN, Anderson Cooper or whatever, they're not in your immediate network. So why would you say that they are in your network since you don't have any connections to them or you don't know anyone that they know?
When the movie came out, it kind of bummed me out because I wrote a chapter in my book called The Social Network. And what I mean by the social network was not the social media network. My social network is the people and groups that I surround myself by or with who influence my behavior. Now, by the way, there's an in-between that, right? There's influence behavior, but right in between that was focus. So if I can get someone to influence my focus in one direction, I will take a different behavior. If someone else influences my focus in that direction, I'll take that behavior. So for example, if a client I'm working with is, they'll say to me something like, hey, Jason, I've been tracking a little bit, and last month, 30 days, I only had dinner with my family 6 times, all right? So a client comes to me, and that's their presenting issue. They want to figure out how to get home in time to actually sit down and listen to their spouse, partner, or roommate for dinner. And I'll say, great, what would be a win? And, they always want to over-exaggerate. Right? I want 30 out of 30. I said, well, you had 6 last month. Can we just go to 12? can we just kind of iterate here a little bit? So all of a sudden, I'll say to them something, which to me it sounds simple, but they'll say is profound. I'll say, who do you know who has had 12 dinners with their family last month? And then they'll think about it a little bit and they'll say, oh, you know what? And over the years that I've done this, guys, I've had times when people said a celebrity's name because Rolling Stone just did an issue, an interview with Johnny Depp or whoever it is, and that celebrity said, I've created a lifestyle where I have dinners with my family, whether I'm on a shoot or not. Look, that person, whether they're a first or second or 43rd degree connection, they're influencing you. They're influencing your focus, and that's what will influence your behavior.
So for someone that does say a celebrity, are they putting junk into their head, or what do you think about someone like that?
I think it depends on what does that focused behavior drive them to do? I'm going to age myself here, but, if someone says, oh, yeah, I'm following a celebrity and they believe in the YOLO concept, I'll say, cool. All right. Not my people, because I've got at least 60, 65 more years on the planet where I get to make considerable impact. I can't do that if I'm living a different lifestyle.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I interpreted this article was building your network from people you already have connections with. So whether it is that celebrity that you do watch on TV every, you know, every movie, or the radio host that you do listen to every day, all the way down to the manager at the restaurant you eat at once a week, all these people that are somehow you're already connected to at some level, and then trying to expand that network with all those different people. Is that kind of one of the ideas behind this?
When the three of us were chatting right before we started recording, and you may produce some of that still, here's the activity. Okay, go back 72 hours. So whenever you're listening to this, back up 72 hours. And over those 3 days, I want you to make a list of every single person that you've had a face-to-face or voice-to-voice conversation with. And then rank those conversations by how much time you've had in the conversation with. Now, you know, full transparency, guys, I travel, I'm in hotels 220 to 250 nights a year, I'm on airplanes 150 to 160 times per year. There have been weeks where I look back over my 3 days and I go, gosh, the most I talked to five different people, it truly was the server at the restaurant, the check-in person at the hotel, the cab from the airport to the Chicago hotel. That was a 45-minute ride. We had a conversation. That was the longest conversation I had in those 3 days with anybody, including my wife.
Do you think there's some problems with that if you're only able to talk to the waiters and the cab drivers? You're not
I think
getting
it depends on what you talk about, right? I mean, you know, the three of us, we all know how to direct a conversation. I mean, I heard your interview with Andrew Warner a while back. You know, what a way he has of directing the conversation of where he wants it to go.
Yeah, tell us about it.
We were like puppets in that interview. Well, that was one of our first ones too, so... And he's a master at that. So he's
but what a great way. I mean, for everybody listening to this right now, right? There could be some people whose first introduction to Joe and Dan and Jason is this conversation. So, you know, our challenge to you is when you leave this, what is it that you want to be discussing, talking about, or focusing on, and how do you attract that into your world?
Well, one of those things that you mentioned in the article is being control. So I'm assuming that also means kind of conversation. So how do you keep that? How do you keep control of a conversation to kind of steer it where you want?
Questions. You know, I always talk about the fourth question in networking events. There's four questions. I'm always trying to get to the fourth question with people. And more these days, I don't know if you guys have been to the TED conference yet in Long Beach. They're moving up to Canada next year. But I'm seeing more and more conferences. They're trying to do, and I don't even think they're conscious of this. I'd love to talk to conference coordinators about it. But conference coordinators unknowingly are facilitating you and me and everybody else and getting to the fourth question. So let's go through the first three real quick, right? You walk up, you see someone, you make eye contact. The first thing we ask them is, what's your name? The next thing we ask them is, where are you from? The next question, the third one is, what do you do? Everybody is trying to get to that fourth question. Now, of course, you're wondering right now, right? What's the fourth question? Problem is, I don't know. It depends on what kind of shoes she's wearing, what kind of watch he's wearing, what book he's holding in his hand. So I have to be hyper-vigilant, hyper-aware, but also very focused on intention. What is it that I came to that networking event, right? For people listening to this cast, what is it that you came here to get? And we want to make sure, the three of us, that we're giving you what you came to get.
That's interesting, because I think that's that fourth question. I've never heard it put that way, but just looking at it now, I wrote it down as you were doing it, not with my left hand because I couldn't read it otherwise, but I do. I enjoy that. I enjoyed hearing about that technique, and I'll have to work on that. But looking at that, that is what everybody, that fourth question is what the hurdle is, because when you meet somebody new, you find out their name, where they're from, what their profession is, or what they spend their time doing. And then a lot of times the conversation just stops right there, and that's no way to build a network.
Well, here's the thing, and the reason that I bring up the TED conference is because they're the one of the best at it. When I checked in at TED, the name tag they gave me, guys, it was literally bigger than a 5x8 note card. It had my big ass picture on it. It had my name in like 48 font. It had where I was from and the title of my company. What did they do? They handled the first three questions. So, you know, I'll be totally self-disclosing here, but when someone came up to me and they said, "What's your name?" I just kind of, it's like, really? It's right there.
I've heard from other people, like Ramit Sethi. He says a lot of people, when you ask them what do they do, they don't like that question because most people don't like what they do. They don't like their job or anything like that. So do you think that's actually a good question to ask?
Well, I think what people do is a subset of why they are here. Now, of course, I'm not going to walk up to someone and say, "Hey, Joe, why are you on the planet?" Right? I mean, that would be kind of weird. However, there's things we can add to it. So, hey, what did you do today? Or, hey, what's the last trip you've taken? Or, hey, do you have a vacation planned? Where are you headed next? And those kinds of questions, if I ask someone, you know, where their next vacation is planned, if they'll start to share that with me, I'll get that psychographic profile going. I'll find out how much time can they take off? What kind of a week are they on? What kind of a budget do they have? And I can start to qualify and quantify based on those questions.
So that technique, though, that's not searching for what the fourth question is going to be. That's searching what the fifth on question is going to be, because you're using that fourth question as a gateway into everything else.
People want to move beyond transaction into relationship toward opportunity. Anybody listening to this podcast, I mean, I've listened to episodes for the past few weeks trying to, you know, get ready and calm my nerves about talking to you two guys. What am I trying to get to? What's the relationship you've built with the people you're talking to? And what can I do? What can I do based on what I've heard? You know, I mean, that cast you just did recently between about podcasting versus blogging, you guys made me rethink my approach.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah, and Tom Ewer, he's a staunch advocate of blogging and not podcasting and this way to consume content. He 100% felt like his way of consuming content was better than ours. But I think he did, and he said it, and that's the whole reason we brought him on, was to debate that. But I think, I don't know, it's interesting because this goes back to you mentioning the celebrities and taking ideas from them, and Joe asked you, well, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And you said, well, it depends. It's not necessarily the generic idea of this is what I'm doing, one or the other, but it's how you use it and how you interpret it and how you implement whatever that is into your life.
I mean, if you guys have the opportunity and, you know, maybe in the next few episodes, months, you know, I would start asking people like me, hey, can we fly out? Will you fly us out to your office to do the podcast? The reason why, if you were sitting in my office right now and you looked around and you looked at the book titles on my shelf and the magazine article pages that I've ripped out and taped to my wall and what's on my whiteboard, the quote right there behind me, you would get a whole different psychographic about, oh my gosh, who is influencing this guy and how did he get to here? How did he go from, you know, making $24,000 as a teacher to an international speaker with a book published in three different languages? How did he do that?
Well, Jason, I got to say, we are very interested now that you mention it. Well, and I do. What you just described was your environment that you're in. And that's something I wanted to get into, because productivity, you've talked about like kind of mental mindset and focusing on certain things, or maybe writing with your left hand, or physical things you can do to improve productivity. But what about just your environment, everything around you? How can you kind of optimize that for productivity?
Gosh, not often that I'm speechless, guys. You know, I guess the bottom line question is it important fundamentally? Now, with that goes, if you look at, wow, a great question. So let me back up here. Let's look out 5 years from now, 60 months from now. And if you were start to create, pull out a blank piece of paper and just let yourself think what might my life look like? So if there's an entrepreneur right now and you've got a 6-month-old, now she's 5 and a half. If you are an employee and you're hacking this thing out at night, now you are 2 years into your own business, right? So it took you 3 years to figure out how to do it. Now you're 2 years in. Once you start to build that scheme, what could this look like later? Then I back up and I say, what is the environment that I need to sit myself in that would be conducive to that life, to that lifestyle, to that experience? Quick example, I used to compete as a triathlete, and that was a major part of my life from 2000 till 2011. Every day, a part of my day was surrounded by how will I train for triathlon. The moment, the day I signed the book deal, so I met Matt, the publisher at Wiley at South by Southwest, which, by the way, if anybody's thinking of going to a conference, just sign up for that one. I met Matt on March 13th. March 18th, I had a follow-up email, and March 31st, he sent me a contract for a book with a 5-figure check. He said it was the fastest one he had done. So in 25 years of publishing, I said I was ready. The moment I signed that book contract, I knew my environment had to change. What did that mean? I needed to be able to fly, to go to sleep in a hotel, to do a whole workshop the next day, and then write for 6 hours that night in a hotel. What did that mean I took out? I took out that 90 minutes of training that I was doing every day. So people ask all the time, you know, about work-life balance, and I don't think it's work-life balance. I think it's 60 months from now, what do you want to be experiencing? And let's back that up to today. What do I need to be doing?
Well, you kind of crushed my dreams of you running through the streets of Europe training for triathlon. I was trying to picture that, but now I see there is a somewhat clean break between the two. So let's put that to you then. What are you aiming for? Where do you see yourself in 60 months, and what have you done for your environment to create that?
There is a community of people who are realizing that they have access if they will ask. So we've built a little community. It's called Get Momentum, and there's about 150 people in this circle that any day, anytime, they can throw a question out to that community and someone will help them. Someone will give some advice, or they'll give an experience. And this whole idea, I mean, look at the book, Your Best Just Got Better, is not for a lot of people. I've had a lot of people who look at the title of that book and they go, oh my gosh, if I got any better, my boss would give me more to do. And I'm thinking to myself, not my people. I want the people who can take on a little bit, figure out how to optimize so they can take on a little bit more. Now, real quick, the more that some of my clients take on, ready for this? The more that some of my clients take on is doing less, more. So anybody who's kind of circling around, they know I've got a lot to do on this planet, and the way I'm doing it isn't optimized. There's still friction to the implementation. That's the people that I'm working with more and more these days.
So when you create this type of 60-month plan, are there certain people, I guess, pawns that you need to move or transact with that you know in a couple of years I'm going to have to get in contact with this person, so I need to make sure I know this person and that person? Do you have to make that type of detailed, I guess, path to these certain type of people?
I think that unfolds. I mean, you know, I'm sure everyone listening to this has heard the Steve Jobs program that he did at Stanford many, many years ago. You know, all the dots, they line up when we look behind. I'm much more in the present moment where I'll be doing research on something and I'll reach out to that person right now. I'll tweet that person, or, I mean, heck, if you just go to Google and type in the author's name and then the word email, you know, 4 times out of 10, the third or fourth line down Google will be their actual personal email. I've called authors at home, you guys. You know, it was 4 o'clock in California, 7 o'clock in Boston. Let me call him and see if he'll answer the phone. So I don't know if I have so much, you know, okay, 5 years from now, who am I going to need to meet? Okay, who do I need to meet before that? I think looking backwards, it's much easier to line that up for me. Wow, I met that guy 3 years ago, and he introduced me to her. Oh gosh, let me give you an example. Just today, I was on radio with a radio station in Canada, because 2 days ago, I got an email where I was CC'd, and a woman, her name is Laura, she had replied to a reporter and said, "I can't do that interview. Jason would be great." And I totally did not anticipate that coming. But that's been someone that I've been friendly with and I've been retweeting for years.
As a productivity tip, do people respond faster with email or Twitter?
You know, it's back to that psychographic profile, kinesthetic, auditory, visual. There's some people that if I follow them long enough, I can intuit I need to talk to them voice to voice. They would rather talk this out. Other people, I will put the handwritten letter together. You know, the dean of Harvard Business School, he and I write back and forth. I handwrite him a letter and he types a letter back.
And that was just because one day you handwrote him a letter and he wrote one back?
Exactly. I read an article he wrote for Bloomberg Business Week. I tore the article out of the magazine. I wrote a full-page letter, and I put both of those in an envelope, and I sent them to him because, look, he's not getting his mail, right? He's got a secretary who's filtering all of that. But my thinking was, if I include his article with my letter stapled, the chances of it making his desk will increase. And since then, you know, he sent me a nice note about the book, and we've had a couple of other correspondences.
So you say you write a handwritten letter every day. Do you plan out ahead, like, hey, this week these are the 5 letters I'm going to write, or is it whatever is kind of
both?
You know,
great question. Full disclosure: at any given time, I've probably got 5 or 10 of these already addressed. And then it lets me be that serendipitous. Oh, you know, here's someone I didn't know I was going to write to. Let me write to them. But I've always got a few that are just waiting.
As you said, we want to make sure our listeners are getting the best content. And one thing we promised them was one last bit from this article that we covered. And I want to circle back to it and end our conversation on this. But the last paragraph and bullet list on this article was, one of the keys to networking is be the person people want to spend time around. Can you send us home with what that means to you and how you think we should do it?
Before that happens, we need to be able to ask ourselves this very important question. And you can start practicing this right now, guys. Anybody listening to this, whenever you're listening to this, as soon as you stop listening to this, the next conversation you have with someone on the phone, on Skype, person to person, as you walk away from that, I want you to ask yourself this question: do I feel better or worse having talked to that person? And it's scary and it's hard. You know, I shared with you that I was a high school teacher before. I mean, look, folks, I did not leave teaching. I did not leave the high school. I did not leave my kids. I left a poisonous environment. I left an environment where people thought mediocrity was fine. In fact, they strove for it. And I realized that after 5 years of putting everything I had into an organization where excellence was not expected nor even looked for, that I had to walk. I had to move away. And over time, I hope I've become the kind of person that after people talk to, they feel better.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Jason, we've had a great talk with you today. Now, I want to tell our listeners right now, this interview, as it was recorded, went much longer than our normal interviews, but it's so content-packed that what we're going to do is send you to the show notes of this episode at entrepreneurshowdown.com, and we're going to have a bonus download. So it's not going to be in iTunes. You're going to go to the website, and we're going to include everything that we had to cut out for this for time's sake, and you can hear a whole lot more of Jason, including what I think is pretty exciting, something that he covered in this podcast, and that's the 4 questions, because Jason, as he mentioned, he used it on us at the very beginning of the very top of our conversation. And if I have Jason's permission, I'm going to go ahead and throw that on there so you guys can see it in action.
I'm glad you got to experience, and thank you for letting me practice what I preach.
I love it. Now, Jason, You have a couple different projects going on and a couple websites. Where's the best place everyone can go to find out about everything Jason Womack?
Because people are listening to this, why don't we say, look, there's a podcast at iTunes. It's called Your Best Just Got Better. If you enjoyed this, jump over to Amazon.com and buy a copy of the book. Nothing makes an author happier.
Love it. And we're going to link to those in the show notes. And of course, Jason's website and everything else he's working on. Jason, thanks so much for taking time today. This was awesome.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Everyone, thanks for giving us a little bit of your time. Have a great night.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.